I will end what has become a rather dispassionate survey with something of a personal statement. Of the approaches addressed, optics, graphics, acoustics, and what I lazily admit under the heading of irony, modulated abstraction, or instinct, it is the acoustic that matters most to me, and which I believe essential to good and great poetry alike. I am not referring solely to the fact that spoken and heard poetry, art on the tongue, so to speak, predates written language. Some hold to the notion that prehistoric writing systems produce the numbers that allow for measure, later meter, in poetry. However, I do feel strongly that a poem must contain a verbal, rhythmic heft, or presence in the air, or imagined when read silently. In short, I want to clarify for the record that I find many optical approaches to poetry little more than diversions, at times outright gimmicks. Though I allow for mystical elements, I am likely unqualified to comment upon. Graphic approaches to poetry, generally more subtle, add novel dimensions to written poems. They are impossible to communicate verbally, thus enriching them, but they are not, finally, important. The acoustic, whether in free verse or in fixed forms, means the most to me. This is, unscientifically speaking, the musical element in poetry. John Stallworthy writes in his essay on versification for the Norton Anthology of Poetry that a poem is a composition written for performance by the human voice. What your eye sees on the page is the composer's verbal score, waiting for your voice to bring it alive as you read it aloud or hear it in your mind's ear. This credo is not meant to be absorbed as a precise standard, but it is useful for the practicing poet. Literary art expressed in rhythmic patterns is as old as civilization itself, though such rhythms can take many and varied forms. Assonance, consonance, rhyme, and alliteration furnish the effects of melody and harmony. Words and phrases chime, even if they cannot be comprehended simultaneously, as with musical harmony, and do not adhere strictly to pitch, as with melody, the analogy remains worthwhile. A poet with a sophisticated ear will produce more interesting poetry than one who ignores the musical properties of the art in order to simply connect dots and fill in spaces. A traditional stanza, even the impish anticlerical limerick, holds both to an auditory shape and a visual structure. In other words, one could identify a limerick simply by either seeing it or hearing it. Ultimately, both aspects are inherent and vital to the existence of poetic form. Pure sound, as in sound poetry, or heavily acoustic poetry, as in spoken word, stand at one end of a spectrum. On the other end, we find shaped poems, with their purely visual effects, crawling into the wormhole of postmodern art that is concrete poetry. My favorite poems dwell on the acoustic end. Ezra Pound remarked that poetry atrophies when it gets too far from music. On this count, at least, I agree with him. You won't see the music. You must hear it.